A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 263. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about being human. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, a very successful BBC Three show and a fairly recent one in the canon, 2009 to 2013. Which answers the question, what happens when a vampire, a werewolf, and a ghost try to peacefully cohabit in the same house? And it's an interesting way of looking at the struggles of three apparent 20-somethings finding their way in the with all the difficulties that the modern world can throw at them. But of course, Brian, with that supernatural twist.
Yes, and that brings in all sorts of interesting things in the supernatural ideas and some sort of political types of things with various groups. Lots of things going on in here for sure. Ran for 5 series, 37 episodes in all, about an hour per episode. So pushing on a little further into the story than we did last time and getting a little bit more spoilery. After the first 2 series, the setting and in fact the production location moves from Bristol to Wales. So we get a bit of a different look there. And after series 3, we start getting replacements of some of the lead actors. And those central 3 characters start to be replaced with others.
Yes, and I was reminded, Brian, of our promo spots, which you know listeners may have heard on other podcasts, where we talked about various ways that TV shows could deal with the different the disappearance or the sort of like the absence of one of the lead actors. And here they manage it quite well by bringing in new werewolf, vampire or ghost characters and slowly integrating them into the cast. But yes, they do have to deal with, I presume, some of it was actors moving on to other projects. Some of it was because storylines had reached their sort of natural conclusion, I guess.
We actually recorded those promos in 2009, just around when Series 1 of Being Human was running.
Oh, there you go. how to deal with the main actor leaving a show.
Yes, it was quite nicely done because you would often have a character who has a more minor role and is interacting with the others who then sort of moves into the house and sort of takes up that main position of there always being a vampire, a werewolf, and a ghost living together and always trying to make their way in society and be as human as they can in that sort of metaphorical sense.
Yes, so we mentioned last time George's girlfriend Nina sort of joins the regular cast from pretty much from series 2 onwards and it becomes 4 in a house for a while. And that introduces some of its own problems of, you know, what do you do when one of your flatmates has a romantic relationship with some various difficulties and embarrassments that can produce. But both Nina and Mitchell leave the show at the end of series 3. And in fact, George is not far behind them because he left the series early on in series 4, I believe, Brian.
Yes, he was there for 1 episode of season 4. And I will throw in the spoiler because I think we need it here that Nina herself is not just a human girlfriend. She does become a werewolf partway through the series.
Yes, which of course throws up many more problems. When you've got 2 werewolves with transformations to contain, and werewolves they don't stop from attacking each other, so you can't lock them both in the same dungeon.
Yes, and we get into, there are all sorts of dynamics. We have several different werewolves involved in the show at one point, and they are both suspicious of each other and supporting each other as well. So you do get some interesting things there, for sure. The original ghost, Lenora Critchlow's Annie, reaches the conclusion of her story and finally moves on at the end of series 4. So by the final series, series 5, we don't actually have any of those original characters, but I think it does quite well in maintaining the concept and the spirit of the show.
Yes, and we get another trio in the Welsh house, the sort of former bed and breakfast known as Honolulu Heights. So we get Vampire Hal, interestingly has obsessive compulsive disorder, played by the actor Damian Maloney. We get a werewolf called Tom, played by Michael Socha. And the ghost is Alex, played by Kate Bracken. And although they're the trio in the final series, their characters are introduced sort of along the way from... certainly from series 4, but I think even the Tom may have shown up in series 3 as well, Brian, I think.
Yes, he was there early in season 3, so he interacted with all of the originals, and all of the replacements interact with some of the original trio as well. So it's not a complete cutover that one group moves out and the next one moves in like ships in the night. It does actually sort of build some interesting relationships and interesting crossover there over time.
And of course, as we've said, this is not just a sort of social drama about young people struggling with work and life and home and so on. It's got obvious lots of supernatural stuff going on, and there will be various clashes and bad guys and sinister organizations for the trios to deal with. So for instance, very early on you get the idea that there are vampire hunters. In fact, Tom the werewolf and his father, who's also a werewolf, were in fact vampire hunters themselves before Tom becomes sort of like used to the idea of cohabiting with a vampire. There's a zombie along the way, I think, Brian.
Well, she's sort of a zombie.
She's sort of a zombie girl along the way. And, of course, we get a variety of sinister conspiracies. We mentioned a sort of vampire community led by Herrick in the first season. Later on, we'll get a vampire organization known as the Old Ones. And we'll perhaps mention one or two other sort of well-known British actors who crop up, because we can't really let Mark Gatiss go by without mentioning a particularly sinister turn by himself in the last two episodes of season 4, where he plays the leader of the Old Ones and, you know, an immortal vampire who presents all sorts of problems for the trio.
Yeah, so we get into these very powerful and very old vampires there. And as you say, a great turn by Mark Gatiss there. We also get glimpses of a terrible future for humanity and sort of things that are slightly out of time, where we see things from the future in a way that fits in there. And we see things with werewolf baby to bring up. Sinister government agencies coming into play. Of course, they have to show up somewhere.
Absolutely. All government agencies, when they appear in these shows, appear to be sinister.
Of course. And by the end, we have the devil himself as a central part of this that ties everything together, which makes for... an interesting way to draw the series to a conclusion.
Yes, and it is, I mean, I suppose in a way, because it's 5 series, 37 episodes, there's quite a lot of stuff to cover, which is why we are not really focusing on any of the particular storylines in any great detail. But it does keep coming back to this trio of friends in a house. And as I said in the last episode, some very emotional stuff for them to deal with characters coming and going, arrivals and departures, as they say, Brian. So it's good stuff along the way.
Yes, absolutely. And we should mention that it certainly does cover a lot of ground, and it also builds a mythos, and I've been quite impressed with the mythos that they build up in this show, in part because it does involve a lot of things. It builds in all these things with the ghosts and vampires and so on that are quite detailed. But I think it's a tight, compact mythos. It isn't like some things that do sort of Monster of the Week, where they're always introducing new supernatural creatures. In this one, really, you have those three. And, you know, those three types of supernatural entities. And only very few others. And when there are others, they're very closely tied into the events of the series and the storylines and the other characters. So it is quite a tight, well-built mythos there, I think.
Yeah, so it's quite interesting. We were talking about this before, and you mentioned this, Brian. You know, the Sinister Government Agency does classify the supernatural creatures, and it only has the three types on its books. So you're right, it doesn't get into just, you know, supernatural creature of the week turning up. Interesting, it's a show that's aware of other TV shows. So Buffy the Vampire Slayer does, in fact, get name-checked in the show, which is quite interesting. They're aware of, you know, some of the comparisons where that was much more, it certainly seemed to me, a different supernatural creature each time. One other show that it mentions, which I'll just mention in passing because it amused me, the ghosts in Being Human can sort of ghostly teleport through a door. And that comes in very useful when they have to unlock locked doors and so on. And when they do this, they refer to it as rent-a-ghosting, which amused me for that sort of strange British children's comedy show about ghosts.
Yes, that's right. A cute reference that they use a number of times there. There was also a passing reference to Sapphire and Steel that made me smile. There is certainly some humor in this show with those references, but with other things as well.
Yeah.
We should mention the spin-offs and related content. There was a North American remake from the Sci-Fi Network that ran for three seasons, 2011 to 2014, which had something of a different feel. It started out being very similar and sort of went off in its own direction. They did that with their own cast, but they kept that cast throughout the entire run. And it didn't run as many seasons as the British version, but I believe it did have more episodes.
All right. And of course, unfortunately, I haven't seen it, but I did mention on the Facebook group this afternoon that we were recording about Being Human, and Robert pointed out that he enjoyed both the British and the US version. And Christopher tells us on the Facebook group that the US version was a fun what-if scenario, so it went in various different directions for the trio, which I guess must be interesting way of doing things.
Yes, for sure.
Another spin-off produced by the BBC itself, again BBC Three, but this time an online spin-off. They produced a show called Becoming Human, which was eight mini webisodes. The first one's about 12 minutes, and then after that, I think they're about 6 minutes each, with another trio. And interestingly, it took it back in sort of age about 10 years. So this was a group of apparent teenagers in high school. Again, they stick with the vampire, werewolf, ghost format. And this time they have to solve the murder of their ghost member. And this started during season three of Being Human, and you can still find the episodes. I couldn't get them to work on the BBC site, but they're all on YouTube, so you can watch them. I watched it yesterday, so the whole thing takes about 50 minutes, so slightly less than one regular episode of the main show. And actually, I quite enjoyed it. There's minimal special effects. It's mainly about the characters and this sort of detective hunt, and it's pretty good. And also, watch it, you'll notice an early acting role for John Boyega, who went on to has become very successful in Star Wars The Force Awakens. So an early role for him here in a BBC Three online series.
Oh, yes, interesting. I should mention as well that the North American remake is widely available on DVD and so on. So you can certainly find that if you want to see it.
Good stuff.
There were also three Being Human novels, and there were audiobook versions of those novels that were read by the original cast members. I haven't had the chance to read those or listen to those, but I'd love to hear comments from anyone who has.
Yeah, likewise here. I wasn't really aware of them until I was writing the outline for this. But like, again, if people on the Facebook group have read the novels or listened to the audiobook versions, please let us know what they're like. So it's time for us to actually start to give our thoughts and feelings about this show, what we liked and what we didn't like quite so much. So Brian, would you like to start us off with what you enjoyed about Being Human?
Well, there's a lot to say because I really did like this one. I liked the world and the mythos that I mentioned earlier, the mythos, but the world that Toby Whithouse builds with vampires, werewolves, and ghosts being sort of in opposition one to the other, but having interactions and dealing with each other in different ways, and the sort of political things that build up with the vampire society, and the ways that you have a different sort of society and interaction of the werewolves. It's a really nice, rich, well-defined world, I think.
Yes, it's a marvelous concept by Toby Whithouse, and the sort of world building, as you say, that he does with it is fantastic. You know, great idea. What would you do with a werewolf, a vampire, and a ghost in the same house? And then the stuff he adds to it, terrific. So yeah, I really liked the concept of the show. I really liked the way it develops. I think the writing's great throughout. As you say, Brian, there's an awful lot to commend about this show.
Yeah, the writing definitely is solid. I basically always enjoyed the stories being told. The ongoing stories and how things build up and sort of carry arcs across a season and so on, I think that was particularly well done in this show.
Yes, and I've referred to it a couple of times, but I did love the way it's almost like the Odd Couple, but obviously it's the Odd Trio. But I did like the way the Odd Trio become such close friends, and they become to depend on each other so much, so that when characters do leave or depart or die, it's very emotional stuff. And, you know, it does build to some extremely powerful and moving scenes, I felt, Brian, of what, you know, what it means to a trio of friends if they lose one of them.
What did you think of the performances?
Can't really find fault with any of the performances. I enjoyed just about everybody in this show. I think the original trio are great. You know, obviously, some of them have, you know, they've moved on. Lenora Critchlow was being in Black Mirror. Russell Tovey's in loads of stuff at the moment. Aidan Turner is currently wowing audiences as Poldark. So, yeah, they moved on, which is a shame in a way. But their replacements all pretty good as well. And I have to mention that some of the sort of, you know, well-known British actors, people like Mark Gatiss, but also Robson Green, Mark Williams, who we know is playing Rory's father in New Doctor Who, Alec Jennings turns up as a very sinister senior police officer who is also, of course, a leader of the vampire conspiracy. And from the first, you know, season or so, Jason Watkins, I think he's a terrific actor, very watchable. He's just turned up in Inside Number 9. He's on a BBC cop show called In the Line of Duty at the moment. So I loved all the performances, really. I thought great stuff throughout. What did you think about them?
I pretty much agree with that. I think they had very strong performances there. Jason Watkins as Herrick was definitely very good. They needed someone who could be sinister and could be a match for Aidan Turner, who comes off as such a powerful character as Mitchell, and they got that with him right from the start. So yeah, some very good things there. I liked the character replacements. I thought they were, all of them were strong as well. And I like how they were handled, how you had a lot of interaction between Tom and George. So when George is gone and Tom takes his place, there is a sense that he knows what this whole situation and the house and everything, he knows what this means. And the idea of being the werewolf in it is not entirely new, because he saw that with George. And similarly, when Alex replaces Annie, there's a similar kind of thing there, which is also quite nicely done.
Yes, they do manage a sense of continuity in the character changeovers. So, as you say, Brian, we have some of the characters appearing alongside each other for several episodes before the sort of previous incumbent of the werewolf role or whatever will move on, and we get the new partner in the house. So I think they've done that very well. And it's interesting that within the world of being human, the vampire, werewolf, ghost trio is not as unusual as you'd think. They certainly come across at least one other household that's set up exactly the same way. And of course, in the web series Becoming Human, they also get another trio interacting. So it's one of those things, apparently, a vampire, werewolf, ghost.
Yeah, it's sort of neat how that was done. And those replacement characters, they're not clones or copies of the originals. They're each one brings something new and different. So it takes advantage of the changes rather than trying to work against them, which is something that shows don't always do. So it was nice to see that.
Yeah, it is. It's great stuff. We mentioned the special effects in our last episode. I think they're well handled, well done. I think the editing really sells it to us as well. So, you know, superb jobs all around there. I like the use of incidental, you know, modern pop music in some of the episodes that really sort of placed it and helped with some of the sequences. There's an awful lot to say about this show, I think, Brian.
There is, yeah. And I think with that look and feel, and you're talking about the pop music and so on, it brings in the element of being a very modern type of show and type of environment where you're not just looking at something that looks like a Victorian era style thing that's been moved into present day. It takes advantage and uses security cameras and voicemail and the rest of it. It embraces its modern environment while having these sort of quite old style supernatural elements in there, and has some neat stuff balanced that way.
Yes, and I, you know, I keep coming back to it, but it does. I liked the modern twist of these three apparent 20-somethings trying to get on in the world. So they're trying to get and hold on to jobs. They're trying to get on with each other. They're trying to get on with their neighbours. They're dealing with some of the problems of modern life. I suppose we should give a slight content warning and say it is a modern show. So there is some bad language. There's some sex and drugs and rock and roll. And of course, with vampires and werewolves, you're always going to get a fair amount of gore in this show, Brian. Not as much as Dead Set, which we talked about recently, but it's still in places quite a bloody show.
It can be in places, yes. Do you have a favourite character?
Well, that's a good question, actually. Yes, who would be my favourite character? You know, the marvellous bad guy of Mark Gatiss, who's only there for two episodes, but almost steals the show. But from the original trio, I've got a real sort of fondness, I think, for George, the reluctant werewolf, trying to control his transformations, trying not to harm anyone, just trying to get on. So yeah, that would be my pick. What about yourself? Who was your favourite?
Mine is actually Nina. who was not in the original trio, but she was there pretty much from the beginning, as initially as a human and becomes a werewolf and moves in to the house and is there for a couple of seasons. And she was a really interesting character, as she was learning these things a little behind the others, and gives us a very compelling performance and a very strong, interesting character.
Yes, great, actually. She was very good. And of course, her relationship with George is fantastic as well. Some lovely stuff there. So, you know, we've talked a lot about the positives of this show. It's a big show, you know, 5 series, 37 episodes, 37 hours of viewing. Were there any problems that you had with it at all along the way, Brian?
There were not a lot. Most of this was really quite strong. I do have to acknowledge that you can see the changing cast as a weakness, and sometimes it's nice to have, see, you know, some of the originals there in some way at the end, which we didn't have. I thought it was handled very well, but I have to acknowledge that as a limitation of sorts.
Okay, yeah. I mean, you know, actors do move on to other projects, so I guess we have to acknowledge that in any long-running show. Misfits, which I mentioned in our last episode, did a similar job of introducing new characters along the way and managing to make them sort of interesting and appealing, even if at first we perhaps resisted the changes because we liked the original setup so much. But yeah, I think it does it well. You know, we asked the question, how does a show deal with replacing lead actors? And I think Being Human does it pretty well. And by the end, you know, when we get to the new trio in series 5, well, I could have done with more of them, actually. You know, I would have perhaps liked to have known more about their stories.
Yeah, Misfits did that pretty well, but I think Being Human did it better.
Right.
And in part, it was because Being Human was doing more overlaps between those characters, and they made the replacements in many ways more different than the earlier characters.
Right. Okay.
I think the effects in it are pretty good. They are somewhat dated, some of the earlier ones now, and somewhat limited, but that's really nitpicking, because on the whole, they're actually pretty strong and well used.
Okay. Interesting stuff.
So, yeah, I struggled to find negative things to say about this show because it was so well done.
Yes, it was. It's very effectively done. My only problem with the show was that there was just so much of it, and I've had to sort of do a, due to various timing issues on my part, I've had to do a rather sort of speed watch of it all. And I suspect it's the sort of show where one episode a week could be just perfect, Brian. It's, you know, it's got a nicely episodic feel, but also story arcs that unfold over different seasons. So a bit of a speed watch on my part. I'd prefer a slower take on it.
It does a pretty good job of balancing individual episode stories versus larger story arcs.
Great stuff. I don't suppose we've got anything else negative to say about Being Human. I guess we're heading towards our recommendations, are we, Brian?
I think so. I can start with that. It's not hard to guess. This is recommended from me. It's a very solid show. The characters are all very good, and the writing and story arcs, even the visuals, it all comes together. It's a very strong show, so definitely recommended.
Yes, it's clearly a double thumbs up from us on British Invaders for Being Human. It's a great show. I was expecting lots of supernatural shenanigans, and of course there's plenty of that, but I was surprised and rather taken with the emotional impact of the show and the way it develops friendships and then has to break them up. So yeah, I think we're very solidly behind Being Human. If you've got a Netflix account, then jump in. It's great stuff. And I'll hopefully be doing a much slower watch as I catch up with the last episodes of series 5.
Very good.
But of course, if you think we are wrong, if you've got your own views on being human, if you can tell us about the books or the American series, then do jump in on the Facebook group and let us know.
So, in summary, Being Human introduced us to the concept of a ghost, a werewolf, and a vampire living together, sharing the same house or apartment, and trying to be human, in that they're trying to emphasize their humanity over the supernatural things and the other things that they're involved in. And we are introduced to this sort of society of vampires who are influencing things and trying to take more control of things. We have different werewolves becoming involved and different ghosts. We have story arcs bringing characters to their conclusions of fulfilling what they need to do. We have strong individual stories and everything moving along towards a conclusion that will resolve the elements of the entire worldview of this show.
Great stuff. Get in touch with us and let us know what you think.
Absolutely.
And of course, come back and join us next time when British Invaders will be bang up to date, an even newer show from 2015. Perhaps a show that didn't get the chance it deserved. We're looking at ITV's version of Jekyll and Hyde. Some interesting intrigue to talk about next time, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. Should be an interesting one to look at. But until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com and all of our previous episodes, all 263 episodes are there, covering well over 100 TV shows. All sorts of things to look at there. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our Facebook group, and we have some good discussions going there.
Splendid stuff. Celebrating 10 years of British Invaders. Who knew there were that many shows to cover, Brian?
Who indeed? Fun stuff.
And of course, you can also find us on the Voice of Geeks Network. That's internet streaming radio, where we go out with several other geek-related shows. You can find us there, vognetwork.com.
So, thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for being with us, and until next time, it's the entirely human Eamon from England also signing off.